You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, proudly brought to you by Shox, pioneers of bone conduction headphone technology. If you take advantage of the Black Friday sale, which is on now at uk.shox.com, you could be listening to the next episode of the Cycling Podcast on a fantastic set of Shox open ear headphones. This is Lionel here, and Shox are completely different to any other headphones I've used because nothing goes into your ear. The cutting-edge bone conduction technology combines comfort and sound quality, whether you're listening to your favourite music or your favourite podcast. And because there's no earbud or pad over the ear, you can stay connected with your surroundings without compromising that audio quality. And there are lots of advantages to this, not least you can still hear what's going on around you if you're out and about. I've also found them a lot more comfortable to wear, not least because more conventional earbuds tend to get a bit sweaty and slippery when exercising. After about half an hour or so on the turbo, I want to take them out of my ears. But there's none of that with Shox because they're fitted securely and comfortably. Sound quality is great and it doesn't really feel like you're wearing headphones. The flagship model, the Open Run Pro 2, comes in a range of colours, including the eye-catching white and orange. That's the Eliud Kipchoge model. Kipchoge, of course, is one of Shox's ambassadors, and he ran the first sub-2-hour marathon a couple of years ago. Shox have all the things that you want from a set of headphones. They fit comfortably and securely, and they have 12 hours of playtime as well. So Kipchoge, at his peak, could, in theory, run 6 marathons before the Shox even begin to run out of energy. There are some great Black Friday discounts at uk.shox.com. For example, the Open Swim Pro model, which, as the name suggests, you can wear while swimming, is currently £135, down from £169. And Cycling Podcast listeners can get an additional £10 off with the discount code CYCLING10. So go to uk.shox.com with the discount code CYCLING10. We'll put those details in the episode description. Elevate your ride with Shox, redefining the sound of sports. Now it's over to Daniel for this week's episode.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast.
Hello, and joining you on Wednesday, November the 27th, also known as Lancashire Day, and hence an occasion close to the heart of one of my partners in conversation today, as we'll find out in a few minutes. My name's Daniel Freeber. I'm the host of this episode of the Cycling Podcast, which will be mainly dedicated to self-humiliation, albeit with a light dusting of self-congratulation. But we will be revisiting and reviewing the predictions we and others made way back in January regarding what would happen in the world of professional cycling in 2024. As hinted just a moment ago, I'll be joined in a few moments by that proud Lancastrian, now award-winning commentator Rob Hatch. The Motown maestro, Larry Warbass, will also be with us. For it was us three, the trifecta of shame, Hatch, Warbass and Freeber, who were in the hot seats with our very cold takes in the speculation episode in January. This is another one of our review of 2024 episodes. So as with all of those to date, I'll give a very quick rundown on the week's headlines in pro cycling. Then we'll tuck into the main meat of the episode with Larry and Rob. First up, and I can't ignore it any longer, cyclocross season has truly begun with the first round of the World Cup, which took place at the weekend in Antwerp. The winner in the men's race was the Belgian champion Elie Isabeth. On the women's side, there was no surprise as Sven van Empel, Visma Lisa Bikes reigning world champion, took first place for the third time in a row in that race, the Antwerp World Cup round. Another race series that commenced the weekend was the UCI Track Champions League in Les Yvelines, just outside Paris. It was an excellent weekend for Matthew Richardson and Dylan Bibic, who lead the men's sprint and endurance standings respectively, and for Emma Finucane and Katie Archibald, early pace setters in the women's sprint and endurance competitions. The second of three Champions League rounds will take place in Apeldoorn in the Netherlands at the weekend. On the road, still very little to report as most teams still have not reconvened for their first true training camp of the winter. The most significant gathering of cycling hitters that took place last week indeed occurred first in a sports hall near Brescia in Italy, before decanting to a nearby nightclub. But it was the A&J Talent Agency's now time-honoured annual end-of-season party. Of course, A&J represent Tadej Pogačar, as well as a few
other top level pros, a few dozen other top level pros. And of course, who should win the paddle tournament that kicked off the festivities but Tadej Pogacar with his doubles partner Felix Kohlschartner. Judging by the social media clips we saw of how the day and particularly evening progressed, one competition that Pog definitely could not reasonably have won without some fairly shameless corruption would have been the dance-off. The various Insta posts and videos of the disco bit of the evening did show Maxime Van Hills appearing to be in excellent spirits this afternoon. The Van Hills, and by extension his management agency, A&J, are still trying to negotiate their way out of the deal that ties him to Lotto Destiny for next year. Van Hills is rumoured to be on Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe's shopping list. One or two World Tour teams are apparently still in the market for new signings, though not Pogacar's. UAE Team Emirates closed their recruitment on Monday with the surprise announcement that they were signing the Danish ruler Julius Johansson from Portuguese team Sabgal, where, incidentally, we think Harrison Wood, formerly of Cofidis, is going to race in 2025. And final item, a quick detour towards Corrections Corner. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned reports in the Italian press that the mooted 2025 Vuelta start from the Piemonte region of northern Italy could now be off. Latest indications are that's back on again, although the route won't be officially presented until the week before Christmas. That concludes the news roundup.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, and this is Lionel here again to tell you that this episode is also supported by NordVPN, the virtual private network to keep your data safe and secure when you're online. Premium cyber security for about the cost of a cup of coffee every month. It's Black Friday and there's some great deals about. If you go to nordvpn.com/TCP, you can buy a 2-year plan and get 4 months extra free. That's nordvpn.com/TCP. You can also try it risk-free because Nord offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if it's not for you, in the unlikely event that you can't benefit from NordVPN services, you can get your money back. But I think once you have a look at what NordVPN can offer, you'll realize that it's quite smart to protect your data and protect all of your internet connections as well as you possibly can. And NordVPN gives you that peace of mind, primarily to protect your private data, such as bank details, passwords, online identity, and also to keep you safe from any of those viruses, malware, or those phishing websites that are trying to trap you into sharing your data with people who want to use it for their own advantage. NordVPN can protect you against all of that. And you can now use a NordVPN account on up to 10 devices. The most efficient way that I use it is to connect our internet router to it, which means that everything that connects to our Wi-Fi is automatically covered by NordVPN. But you can use it on your computer, laptop, tablet, phone, even your smart TV if you want. There are lots of other benefits too. You can find out about those at nordvpn.com/TCP, not least being able to watch your favourite sporting events or TV shows, even if you're not in the UK. If you're out and about on holiday and you want to carry on watching your favourite streaming services, you can switch your location and your service will be uninterrupted. It's fast too. It doesn't slow down your internet connection. So check it out at nordvpn.com/TCP.
We'll go first to Rob Hatch. Happy Lancashire Day, Rob. Did you know it was
Lancashire Day? It's Lancashire Day.
It's Lancashire Day. What happens on Lancashire Day? Does that mean, well, you always perform in your Lancashire, in your authentic Lancastrian accent on the podcast, not the posh broadcast voice. Someone actually asked me on social media or suggested to me that you should do the podcast in your posh broadcast voice.
Whichever that wants, but it's Lancashire Day, isn't it? So we've got to go northern, I guess.
What? Oh, God, I can barely understand you now. What happens on Lancashire Day?
No idea. There's Betty from Coronation Street. Ask if you want an hot pot or something.
Oh, my God, this is awful.
I don't know.
Rob, anyway, let's move swiftly on from that. And first of all, I congratulated you in absentia last
You did. That was very kind of you. I was listening and sort of doing the cleaning or something, as you normally do when you're listening to podcasts. And I heard my name. Very, very, very nice of you.
Formal congratulations. This is on your very deserved award last week. I'm slightly sad that we can't see it at the moment, but I presume that it's residing currently in your home in Mallorca, and you're not in Mallorca. But very well done from all of us at the Cycling Podcast.
Thank you. I'll send you a nice picture.
Yes. Moving now to, I'm not sure whether he's award-winning. He's the champion of our hearts. Larry Warbass.
Hey, everyone.
The Motown Maestro, who is at home in Nice. Larry, we've just been talking before we started recording about your pre-season. It's already started. You're already riding. You're already training. Tell us a bit about what's going on.
Yeah. Just like getting back into the swing of things, getting back into the training. The weather hasn't been that good. I mean, I think it's been better than a lot of Europe. I saw a lot of people had snow. So we've just had a little bit of rain, a little bit of gray skies, which is a little disappointing for Nice because usually it's always sunny here. But yeah, just clocking in some hours. My new coach on the team was like, yeah, we're going to start slow. And then all of a sudden this week I have 2 times 5 hours, 1 time 6 hours. So I don't know how slow of a start that is, but yeah.
Are they expecting you to win on Loop Nussblad?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know my schedule yet, but yeah, no, actually it's been nice. It's just like, it's cool because this time of year, you're not doing like a bunch of intervals and whatever. And so you can always ride with like guys. And so yeah, I've just been trying to ride with guys who maybe I don't always ride with. And yeah, it's been nice.
Who is the new coach?
His name is Toon van Erp. He used to work for, he started at DSM, then he was a bit at Ineos, and now he's been at Tudor for, I think, the last year and a half or so.
Any big changes on the horizon on the training front? Do you sense from Toon already? Is it just a tune up, or is it going to be?
I don't know.
Is he going to revolutionize your training?
I'll tell you in a few months, but no, I think, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, so far, we're just starting, so nothing too crazy yet, but no, I think it'll be probably similar to what I've been doing.
Talking of things, beginning with two, any sign of that lovely, free, sparkling Tudor watch yet?
No, not yet.
Larry, you mentioned, well, the activities that you've already undertaken in this pre-season. I noticed from your Instagram at the weekend, went on a lovely sort of a kind of twilight walk with Matteo Jorgensen. he was the third wheel, unfortunately, I think, wasn't he? You were with your partner and Matteo was on his own, but he was looking sort of gazing wistfully, Fran Reyes style, out over the Mediterranean.
Yeah, exactly. No, we went on a hike. It was actually during the day. It wasn't really evening, but yeah, maybe the sun was low, but nice to see Matteo for a little bit. But yeah, he's already off doing recons and then back to the US. So yeah, I think he did a quick trip, but not joking around on his team.
No, well, Matteo Jorgensen is going to feature in this episode, chaps, because as you already know, we are going to do something we've not done in the past. We do generally always start the season nowadays with what we call the speculation episode. Famously, we don't usually speculate on the Cycling Podcast, except for one episode a year at the start of the year when we give our predictions for the season ahead. What we've never done before is go back and humiliate ourselves, sense check ourselves, see what we got right or mostly wrong. We also, of course, canvass the opinions, predictions of other friends, illustrious voices within professional cycling. They give us their predictions. So we're going to humiliate them as well today. Hear what everyone, as I said, got completely, spectacularly, wildly wrong. Can you remember, chaps? Could you remember? I say you're a bit of homework. I asked you to listen back to some of what you predicted. But could you remember what you predicted?
Larry, I missed that homework, sorry.
Yeah, I thought you might, Larry. It was...
His dog's behind him eating it.
Yeah. And he has a dog as well. He has a dog. Talking of dogs, chaps, you may remember this. We started, because I had to re-listen. I do my bloody homework, Larry. I had to re-listen to that whole episode. And we started that episode talking about an unlikely chance meeting that had occurred between Richard Plugger and Thibaut Pinot in Tignes in January, because they were both on holiday
celebrating the new year with their respective families. And Richard Plugger, I think, has a chalet or apartment in Tignes, or he was certainly staying in Tignes. The Pino family were also there. And they bonded over, and we had this long debate in the episode about what kind of dog it was. It was a big sort of polar bear type dog. I don't know much about dogs. Anyway, they both got the same breed of dogs. And of course, this followed a bit of a public, not a spat, but there had been the incident at the Tour de France earlier in the year where Richard Plugger had called out Groupama about over their riders maybe enjoying a beer on a rest day. And we had a bit of a giggle about sharing a pint together to toast the new year, 2024. So that was how we started that episode, speculation episode. As I said, we also had predictions from some of our friends. Let's remind ourselves of a couple of predictions that kicked off that episode, shall we? Let's hear what Jack Haig of Bahrain Victorious was predicting for 2024 and what Magnus Ora, our Norwegian friend from TV2, what he was predicting.
I reckon we're going to see more emphasis put on aerodynamics. We've already seen the Aero Ears helmet from Kask and Filippo Ganna. I think we're going to see a few more quirky aerodynamic things going on. Maybe some weird radio contraptions for making aerodynamic semi-fairings for time trials. I think Jonas will struggle. Hot take, no reason behind it. Liège, Bastogne-Liège will be won by Matej Mohoric, and Milano Sanremo, Pogacar will go solo and take the solo victory.
Here are the big predictions slash hot takes for 2024 coming to you from Norway. Number one, Tadej Pogacar will become only the third rider in history, I think, to win the Giro, the Tour and the Worlds in the same season. A slightly easier Giro route should help him. And I do think that Jonas Vingegaard, based on, well, nothing, I guess, just won't win a third Tour in a row. And the Worlds in Zurich is obviously perfect for Pogacar. Number two, continuing with the Pog theme, after winning the triple, I do think he'll end up fulfilling a boyhood dream and release a song, probably a rap of some kind, on Spotify, and thus become not only a champion cyclist, but also a famous and renowned artist. His song will likely feature either Primoz Roglic, Matej Mohoric, or maybe Snoop Dogg. Who knows? Anyway, speaking of dogs, I don't think Nairo Quintana will be top dog in 2024, but I do fancy a sensational podium placing in the Giro for Nairoman. Maybe? I think. Anyway, that's my three predictions for 2024.
So, Larry, Jack Haig was predicting all kinds of aero advancements, new tricky bits of kit that we might see in 2024. He thought that aero, getting aero, being aero was going to be a big topic of conversation. Was it? Of course, early in the year, in March, in fact, Visma at Lisa Bike unveiled their, doesn't really have a name yet, does it? That helmet, that monstrosity, that eyesore of a helmet that they said was very effective. And it was a bit controversial for a few days. We thought it might be outlawed. And then it was sort of widely pointed out that they didn't have that much success with it. They didn't win that many time trials with it. And there was a bit of mirth about this. But Larry, on the aero front, was it a revolutionary year in the end?
I would say that we've just sort of continued on the trend that we've been going, you know? I would say maybe more people are thinking about aero all the time now, whereas before, maybe, you know, it was only certain guys. You know, I know like in the UK, aero's been huge for a long time, right? You know, I guess that just comes from like the time trialing scene and everything like that. But, you know, I would say the pros were a little bit slower to adopt. And now I think everyone is really thinking about it, you know? I mean, you rarely now see guys without aero socks or without a skin suit in a race. So, okay, those are sort of like the low-hanging, easy fruit. But I guess you need your team to even make aero socks, which a couple of years ago, a lot of teams didn't. So I would say, yeah, people are thinking about it a lot. But I think even going forward, it's going to be even more like road bike aero testing, which still guys haven't done that much, which I would have thought we would have seen more teams doing that already.
Chaps, for this cold take, this reheated speculation episode, I got my first hot take for 2020. Well, not for 2025, beyond 2025. This week, we've seen quotes from Christian Prudhomme about how to make cycling safer. And this was from the AIOCC Congress on Lake Garda a few days ago. That's the organization of race organizers, sorry. He's the president of that organization. And he basically said that in order to make cycling safer, one of the things that has to happen is cycling needs to get slower at the top level. Larry, I can foresee the day not too far away when aero clothing is banned or restricted in a significant
way. How do you police that?
Yeah. In a significant way.
I mean,
well, I don't come up with the rules.
You have to have so many folds in your jersey, so it's baggy. You have to have 1 centimeter between your bicep and your bit of, yeah. How do you police that? Come on.
Currently, you have sort of skin. So there's the traditional kind of skin suit, road suit, that's worn for racing that looks like a time trial kit. And you also have aero jerseys, don't you, Larry?
Yeah.
And aero short socks and whatever. Is there a significant aerodynamic difference between the two things, the one piece and the two piece?
I think it depends. Totally depends on the material of both of them. You know, so if it's like a faster material, then yeah, it could be a lot faster. But I remember like EF maybe 2 years ago or something, they tested it. And like for some reason, their aero jersey and shorts together were more aero than their road racing skin suit.
But, okay.
So I think it totally depends on the material. I think you could probably get a big advantage if it was like, you know, really custom tailored and a lot faster material than perhaps the normal shorts and jersey. But to be honest, that's yeah. I think as like Rob said, I think that'd be way too hard to police. I think there would be easier ways to slow down the peloton. I don't know. For example,
go on.
Maybe, I mean, this just literally came in my head. I have no idea. But like, imagine we all get the same tires and they're just super slow tires, okay? You know, because like different compounds and tires can make a huge difference. I mean, you know, like in some other sports, like everyone has to use the same kind of tires. Maybe they could do something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's happened. It did happen in Formula One. I know nothing about Formula One, but I know that happened in Formula One. Another point of comparison could be there have been calls for this in golf because the distance the ball has been a hot topic in golf, and has been the suggestion that there should be a standard ball. There are too many interests at play, yeah, manufacturers to make that likely. Yeah, I mean, helmets, Larry?
I mean, I don't think helmets are making a massive difference. You know, it's like a few watts. I mean, you know, the problem is it's just the whole system, right? Yeah, tires make a difference. Wheels, I mean, maybe they could say you can't go already. I think there's some rule maybe in a road race you can't have deeper than 80 millimeter wheels or something like that. So you could go a little bit less wheels, but even now, even the like 30 millimeter wheels are really aero, you know? So I'm struggling to find a place where they'd really be able to slow us down that much, you know?
People really have an issue with this whole idea of the regulations effectively slowing the peloton down, or new regulations being imposed that would slow the peloton down. But it does happen in, for example, there are a whole, again, I don't know much about Formula One, but I know enough to know that there are a whole glut of regulations that focus much more on safety than speed, and do in fact slow the cars down and slow the races down. So I don't think that it's maybe as stupid an idea as it would initially seem. Some people regard it as victim blaming. You know, we should point out that this isn't the only thing that Christian Prudhomme is advocating. He's also talked about courses needing to be slower. He's also got some slightly wackier ideas, like, for example, padded clothing. You'll all be looking like skateboarders, Larry.
Yeah, I also feel like that'd be pretty hot to have padded clothing, but
yeah. Or some kind of technology which... There are manufacturers, DSM have a technology, don't know, which is supposed to restrict abrasion, I think, mainly in there. I don't know if that's hugely effective. I don't think it's, you know, it's not going to stop people breaking bones.
Right.
Anyway, that was one of Jack's predictions. Aero being a big topic in 2024, it was to an extent. Matej Mohoric winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Rob, remind us what happened in Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Mate Mohoric. Mohoric didn't get anywhere near, and it was the Pog show, wasn't it?
As wasn't Milan San Remo, because Jack thought that Pogacar would go solo and win Milan San Remo. He also thought that Jonas Vingegaard was going to struggle generally and have a bit of a difficult year. He was right on that score. We know why he was right, because of Vingegaard's crash, mainly in the Tour of the Basque Country. However, Larry, this did lead to a discussion between you and I about Vingegaard as the sort of peloton alpha and as being the strongest guy in the bunch, we thought, being maybe less vulnerable to crashes, having to sort of push the envelope less than other riders. And we sort of talked about this kind of bulletproof aura that Visma had developed around them in the previous year, 2023. In fact, let's just listen to us talking about those two things, Vingegaard's invulnerability and Visma's as well, I suppose.
Although some of us can't admit to having them.
Yeah, we there's this sort of dogma in professional cycling around the Tour de France that the best rider in the peloton crashes, well, they tend to stop crashing when they suddenly become the best rider in the Tour de France and the guy who's expected to win the Tour de France and the Tour de France alpha. They have tended in the past to get ill less and to crash less, and they seem to be the victim of less bad luck. And some of that is because they are the best. They're the most resilient physically. They maybe don't have to go as deep, so they're not getting as ill, or they're not getting ill as often, and so on and so forth. So they're not maybe pushing the envelope as much as the guys who are straining to keep up. Larry, is there something in that, and is that one argument for Vingegaard continuing to avoid crashes and avoid the sort of mishaps and misfortunes which would open the door for a Pogacar or a Roglic? Because the figures and what we've seen on the road the last 2 years are pretty eloquent and emphatic. They tell us that Vingegaard is the strongest rider.
I would say guys who are on the limit, I don't know about getting sick, but they definitely crash more, you know, because you have to take more risks. If you're like on the limit, you know, maybe you need to like catch back or save some energy on the descent, things like that, you know. So maybe guys who are really pushing the limits crash more. And maybe that's why sort of like the favorites in the Tour crash less. But I mean, I don't know. I also really like Pogacar, but I don't really see Vingegaard as being too fallible. He's pretty rock solid and his team is the most rock solid. So yeah, I can't see, like, I mean, Vingegaard's going to have the perfect preparation and Pogacar's going to have less than ideal preparation because he's doing the Giro.
Rob, we were very, very wrong about that, weren't we?
We were, but then again, let's move the discourse to now. Let's imagine we're talking about UAE next year. It's so hard, isn't it, to say that the people who are absolutely romping on to every victory, who are looking so untouchable, I mean, it's impossible for us to turn around and say, no, they're going to be rubbish next year. They're going to have all this bad luck and it's not going to happen. You know, nobody would have predicted how it was about to turn for Visma Lisebike, or Jumbo Visma, as they were known back then. Nobody would have predicted that in their right mind, would they? That it would be such a dramatic shift in luck and performance?
You wouldn't have predicted it, but some might have predicted some kind of rebalancing of the cosmic forces, the universe, that everything went so well.
Is that you saying UAE are going to win nothing next year?
Well, then? I don't know. Larry, when Matteo was gazing out over the Mediterranean wistfully the other day, was he reflecting on precisely this, the cosmic forces and the, you know, the laws of attraction and how that was going to turn back in Visma Lisebike's favour in 2025?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we did go on a ride and we were talking about crashing and stuff like that. He is running to hopefully improve his bone density. But, luckily he seemed to...
That doesn't work, apparently. It doesn't work.
Oh, does it not work? Okay.
No, it's a bit of an old wives' tale.
Someone tell him.
Yeah. Because I've always believed that I always heard and thought that it had beneficial effects on your whole body. If you were just pounding your legs, for example, running, that improved your bone density everywhere. It doesn't at all, and even on the legs it's apparently quite limited. Anyway, don't tell him that.
Okay, well, I won't tell him that. We'll let him keep running. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, how can you predict that, like, all these guys are going to crash? And you know, like, I guess even if you think about Vingegaard crash, it's like, I mean, that was like kind of a freak chance that it happened second wheel in the peloton and then like all the leaders crashed. You know what I mean? Like we probably mentioned that, like, if you ride at the front, yeah, you're probably less vulnerable to crashes. But yeah, sometimes if the crash happens at the front, then, you know, you can't avoid it, right? So, you know, I guess that's just the sport. It is super dangerous. And I do think, yeah, they just had a bit of bad luck this year in all the crashes that they had and all the guys that they had out. But I wouldn't guess that that would happen at UAE all of a sudden this year. You know, I think it's just total chance.
Who can possibly predict the future, Larry? Who could ever predict the future in professional cycling? Well, Magnus did precisely that, because he predicted, sensationally, he predicted that Pog would do the triple crown. He would win the Giro d'Italia, he'd win the Tour de France, and he would win the World Championship road race. He also sensationally predicted that Pog, Rog, Primoz Roglic, that is, and maybe Snoop Dogg would feature in a highly successful rap collab, which would possibly stream on Spotify and have us all, I don't know, very excited in 2024.
You sound excited about that.
Well, I was excited
at
the time.
We did get Snoop Dogg, didn't we?
Well,
the Olympic Games. He was everywhere.
Because, Rob, you seem to have forgotten that this actually also did happen. It didn't stream on Spotify. Well, it sort of did by extension, but it premiered on that very episode of the Cycling Podcast. Let's remind ourselves, shall we?
Snoop, you ready to drop these vocals, man? The shizzle, my nigga.
I'm gone. I'm dead.
Good day, huh? We will enjoy it. Like I said.
I'm gone. I'm dead.
Take it, Jeff Frizzle. Your little bristles off the hizzle. The shizzle, my nigga.
I'm gone. I'm dead.
Like I said. Good day, huh? We will enjoy it. Good day, huh? You will enjoy it.
Well, chaps, who could have ever forgotten that? One of the great moments, I think, not only in 2024, but in the history, in the illustrious history of this podcast. Slightly, I'm not going to dwell on it too much. Or there might be more collabs in 2025. Who knows?
I was going to say that the listeners of the Cycling Podcast have been waiting quite a few years for the follow-up single to the Prudy Mega Mix.
To the Prudy Ibiza Rap. I think that got airing as well in one of our friend specials this year. Magnus's other prediction, slightly less successful. He expected Nairo Quintana, to finish on the Giro d'Italia podium in 2024. Rob, what do you remember of Nairo Man's Giro? Well, I look it up where he did.
I remember looking for him, wondering where he was quite a lot. I remember looking down at the rain jackets and thinking, is that him? Isn't that him? He was pretty anonymous, let's be honest. But I think that phrase before the Nairo Man Twitter corner starts getting on us should be caveated with the fact that he had a very late start to the season, didn't he? He didn't ride at all, almost, because he wasn't so well for most of the spring.
Yeah, he had a lot of problems, didn't he? One memorable moment of Nairo Man's Giro d'Italia, he was the next best, wasn't he, in Livigno, in Motolino. And he was sort of overtaken, given a bit of a haircut by Tadej Pogacar, not too far from the line there, wasn't he? Do you know one thing that impresses me about Nairo Man? Have you ever seen him doing sort of promo content on Instagram? His on-screen presence is quite impressive. His pieces to camera are much more polished than one would imagine. Rob and I, sort of on a weekly basis, we have a bit of a laugh at, there's a famous football pundit in the UK, Gary Neville, who does adverts for a health food brand, Larry, called Huel. And these have become sort of, they've developed their own cult following because he's so incredibly wooden when he does this. Not Nairo Man. Nairo Man is a natural. I can definitely foresee a future as some kind of quiz show host back in Colombia for Nairo Man.
He was being decorated last week as well, wasn't he?
Was he?
The Colombian Parliament. I think at the Senate he was being given some award for services to cycling and to the nation. So yeah, a decorated Nairo Quintana.
And he's back next year, isn't he? He's got another year with Movistar.
He's expected to do a Giro and a Vuelta next year, apparently.
Oh, he is. Larry, did you come across Nairo Man much in 2024?
In the Giro, we had a few run-ins.
Run-ins? Oh, come on, Larry.
I don't know.
This sounds good.
Oh, no, I don't know. Like, in the Peloton, he's not worried about making friends, you know what I mean? He's cool with throwing the elbows, you know, like bumping bars, whatever. This. And so, yeah, in the end, like Movistar was always...
He fights dirty. He fights dirty.
Yeah. So Movistar was always, you know, coming up the side of us, fighting for a position. And yeah, so we, you know, I don't know why, but for some reason, the whole Giro, it was like Movistar always next to us, always bumping bars. It was a bit fatiguing from time to time, but that's bike racing, right?
So some sublime there from Magnus and some slightly more ridiculous. Let's give ourselves some credit here, because just to go back a little bit to what Jack Haig predicted and also what Magnus said there about Pogacar doing the treble, effectively. This is what we thought about Pogacar's prospects in Milan-San Remo, which Jack Haig, of course, thought he would win solo, but also the World Championships.
And Pog at San Remo, I think that's a difficult one, as much as I'd like to see it. As always with San Remo, it will come down to millimetres, whether it's millimetres at the top of the Poggio or...
The Poggio, you revealed it already. You've just written my commentary line for me for March. Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah. He's going to keep trying, and he might get one opportunity between now and the end of his career, but I think it's going to be difficult.
It's that sort of 500 metres, kilometre, isn't it, towards the top of the Poggio that is going to decide things.
Exactly.
Where, well, I'd love to see Poggi win San Remo. I think it'd be super cool.
It would be cool.
But I do think he'll win the Worlds.
You're nodding.
It's super hard. That's all I know. It's like 4,500 meters of climbing or something. Mm. Something like that. So yeah, I think it's just going to be a super hard, you know, it's going to be Lombardia. You know what I mean? It's going to be just like an epic one-day mountain stage, pretty much, I think. So.
And Slovenia will have the team as well, if you think about it, for that sort of parkour as well, won't they? And, you know, I think even in the past when they've ridden together, Roglic and Pogacar have ridden quite well together. They sort of get on, don't they, even though they're very different characters. And think of that supporting cast. You just mentioned one of them, Daniel Mohoric, there's the likes of Trapnik, and we could go on all day if they've got the numbers, which we will do because of the UCI points and all that sort of stuff. They'll, I think, start out as big favourites, won't they?
So, chaps, a little sort of dusting of self-congratulation there. We thought he would struggle to win Milan-San Remo. Have we revised our thinking about that? Obviously, there is this feeling that it's going to be an even bigger priority for him next year because he is now in the business of just ticking off the last races that he still hasn't won. I've read, heard a few interesting theories about how he could make it happen next year. A few people have identified the stretch, Larry, I can't remember how many kilometres it is, between the bottom of the Cipressa descent and the start of the Poggio as a key area that last year, I think everything sort of became neutralised there after UAE had ridden a hard Cipressa and a few riders were able to recover a little bit. There has been the suggestion that if UAE managed to get enough guys over the top of the Cipressa to really drill it into the bottom of the Poggio, that might make a difference. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking, I was reading an article about it today, actually. And I was trying to think, like, if I were Pogacar, how would I try to win this race? And it's really not that simple, because it's like, okay, I don't know, they could try riding hard on Turchino or something, like super early. And then the problem is you have a long time before you hit the Coppi. Already last year, they rode way harder on the Coppi than they had before. Or than we ever have before. But that didn't seem to make a massive, massive difference. I guess, yeah, maybe if they are able to have more guys over Cipressa and then, ride all the way to the bottom of Poggio, it's still, I don't know, it's not that easy. And I think it also totally depends on the guys you bring, and you still need some kind of like guys to help out early on. You know, you can't just like show up. If you want to win the race like that, you can't just show up all of a sudden like at the end of the race. Everyone's going to be watching them to control. So it's not simple. I don't know. I still think it's going to be pretty hard.
Do you think it might be worth it 1 year at least to just do nothing and count on the fact that in a sprint after 290 kilometers, I mean, he's not that far away from the fastest guy. And we know that it's not a full field of sprinters that gets over the Poggio. It might only be 10 riders. And he's come pretty close in sprints. But to just economize all of his energy...
I mean,
until
wasn't Philipsen second last year?
Philipsen won last year.
He won. Okay, well, if Philipsen's there, like, I mean, it's, I mean, what are you going to do? He's not going to beat him, right? You know, I mean, that's the problem.
Rob, what do you think?
I think, and this is the thing with Sanremo, it's impossible to plan for, isn't it? You can think of a different way and then it works out in another way. And that's why we see every year, you know, we roll out all the cliches, don't we, in March. It is the perfect bike race, certainly for that last half an hour, because anything and everything can and will happen. I mean, we didn't think that Nibali would have won it when he won it. So you can never say never. You didn't think that, you know, maybe somebody could go away nowadays like Mohoric did on the descent, but then came the dropper post and you all saw what happened there. And we always say, well, we're going to have a bunch sprint this year, we're going to have a bunch sprint. And then, you know, who's there? In the last few years, we haven't had too many sort of finishes with too many people involved. We might have had a small group coming behind the two or three that have been involved in the front group. And then, yeah, you can plan for Cipressa. You can plan to ride in that section around roughly 10 kilometers between Cipressa and then Poggio. But they tried that last year and it didn't quite work for them. They burnt out one or too many men too early on.
Did they not ride quite slowly between the Cipressa and the Poggio last year?
Well, they didn't have enough men left.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the issue. They'd burnt them out already and they've not, you know, riders. So immediately the talk straight after, you know, for the, you know, people trying to back up the theory that that Pogacar is going to win Sanremo next year was, all right, we've got to have this rider in the team. You're too many climbers, too many. And it all got quite technical, you know, as if you're playing pro cycling manager and you can get, you know, one type of rider in and they're going to do this sort of metronomic job. There are so many things to factor in because we quite often forget that we're talking about this section of the race. There's 260, 70 kilometres already been ridden by this point. So anybody who's on that slight, small fraction of a percent off is just not going to be able to do the job that, you know, that on the computer games they're planning them to do. It's so, so difficult to plan. And that's why it might be the one in the end. You know, we might be all forgetting about this in March when he wins it, but it might be the one that proves difficult.
Or they just go absolutely bananas at the bottom of Cipressa, ride 5 minutes as hard as they can, Poggi goes, hopes to cause chaos, gets away, and then, like, it's not organized enough behind, and then he's able to stay away solo the whole way to the finish. I don't know.
Do we think that he can control the weather? I mean, can he literally make it rain? I mean, he can do... I mean, are we absolutely sure that his abilities
don't
stretch...
He has to try that hard on the 20th of March, whatever it is.
Because I think the weather is one thing that could offer some salvation in this quest. A bad weather day, really bad weather day, of the sort of kind we saw when Gerald Sielek won, when the race is just, it just becomes chaotic and it becomes almost a battle to survive rather than a race. And that was what it was like that year. I could see him winning in those circumstances.
You're not saying that they have to get on a bus for Pog to win Sanremo?
Pretty much.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by MAP.
A big thank you to MAP, our clothing partners who have been supporting us for the past three seasons. They have a fantastic Black Friday sale on at the moment. Lots of unmissable discounts at map.cc. I would advise going and having a look and seeing if you can pick yourself up a bargain, because there is some really nice kit available at some very attractive prices. So that is map.cc.
Well, chaps, talking about the weather, Rob, you had many predictions, but one of your predictions focused specifically on the weather. Let's have a few of yours from earlier in the year, from January.
Yeah, I think we're due a sunny Giro. So a Giro without any shortened stages or bits chopped off on the route. And I would say that Pog will take the first Maglia Rosa. Will he take it towards the end? We're not sure, but I think that the first Maglia Rosa could be his. Talked a little bit there, Larry, about Matteo Jorgensen. He's delighted with his programme, isn't he? And he's going to be on the same classics programme as Wout van Aert, who I think, because of his different prep this year, will crack a cobbled monument. I also think in the same year, he'll win stages at both the Giro and the Vuelta as well. He might even win the Maglia Ciclamino. So why not go the whole hog? Because I'm not good at this anyway. No one will remember it next year. And one other, Tudor, I think, will make the Grand Tour debut. And I think they'll make a stage win.
Rob, you had a shocker, mate.
One of them ones, isn't it?
Sonny Giro.
Well, it was sunny for a bit.
No future as a weatherman. No future. Well, you've mentioned many times that Mystic Meg is also from Lancashire. Happy Lancashire Day to
from
Mystic
Accrington
Meg
as well.
Yeah, you've got no future as a soothsayer, as a fortune teller, or as a weatherman. Sonny Giro wasn't really sunny, was it? You thought there wouldn't be any stages.
There's always one, isn't there?
Larry, any memories of any weather at the Giro d'Italia?
I mean, it was actually better than the year before. I'll give you that. So yeah.
Small wins.
We did have a few hiccups, though.
Rob, in his wisdom, also predicted that Tadej Pogacar would take the first Maglia Rosa of the Giro d'Italia. That was about the only thing he didn't take in 2024. Can you remember who it was? He took the first.
Narváez.
Well done. Rob also thought that...
From Tadej Pogacar, let's say. Come on, he was second. He wasn't second.
He was third, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was second.
Who else got it?
Without looking. Just surprised. I was looking at his riders. Max Schachmann was second.
Oh, yeah, yes, okay. He got up there, didn't he, down that hill?
And Pog was third. And then Pog took the jersey. Was it the next day or 2 days later?
The next day at Europa.
Rob also thought that Wout van Aert would win stages of the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España. Of course, he did not participate in the Vuelta because he had a nasty crash in Duazdo of London, wasn't it?
Didn't participate in the Giro. But he did
participate in the Giro, but he did win stages in the Vuelta before crashing out of that. And probably a year early with this, Rob, you thought the Tudor would win a Grand Tour stage.
We're just spilling it up for Larry, don't worry.
A bit premature with that. You thought that Tudor would get a wild card in invitation for the Giro, of course.
To be honest, that wasn't difficult to predict, was it?
Yeah, I pointed out at the time when they were sponsoring the time trial, that was that wasn't your boldest prediction. So a mixed bag there from you, Rob. Let's have a few more prognostications, shall we, from some of our other friends. Let's hear from Rose Manley, host of the cycling podcast Femina. And also from Mitch Docker, who, of course, covered the Tour de France for us with us this year.
I'm going to say that Guy Raylini is going to take the win on Alpe d'Huez at the Tour de France Fam. I'm going to say that Fabio Jakobsen will be the year's top sprinter.
My predictions for this season are that Cavendish won't get the elusive record. One more year, it's still just going to get out of his reach. Unfortunately for him, I reckon Caleb's going to come back and fire five stages at the Tour de France. Maybe that could be a bit much. I might need to look at the actual stages to work that out. But he's going to win a few. Feel like being back home at Green Edge will make him get back to his old winning form.
Sorry, chap. Sorry, Rose. Sorry, Mitch. To name and shame you there. Gaia Realini did not win on Alpe d'Huez, I'm afraid. Rose, of course, that was a famous day of cycling, but it was not one where Realini emerged victorious. Fabio Jakobsen to be the best sprinter in the world. Didn't happen. Bettered, I don't know whether it's superior or inferior, only to Mitch's predictions about sprinters. He predicted that Mark Cavendish would not get a 35th Tour de France stage win. And that Caleb Ewan would be the dominant sprinter this year with five stage wins at the Tour de France. Not only at that point was Caleb Ewan already sure that he wasn't going to be riding the Tour de France, but he didn't have a great year, did he? Larry, any insight you can give into Caleb Ewan's 2024 season? Is he a guy you see on training rides?
I saw him the other day, but off the bike. In the end, I think he was just a bit disappointed, you know, also like to not do the Tour de France and stuff. You know, I think already in the Giro, he was supposed to be like the main sprinter. And what I heard by the end of the Giro is like they let also Max Walshite have his own chances too, you know, so then like, I guess that kind of creates a bit of a rift in the team, you know, if you're just letting all the sprinters sprint for themselves. It's probably not the best for a guy's confidence, right? And then, you know, I think Caleb really wants to go to the Tour de France. And again. And I think, yeah, at JCO, that's probably not happening. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think that's a bit tough for him because he would like to get back to the biggest races and the biggest race. And, yeah, I don't think he's going to be able to do that there. So I guess, yeah, we'll see what happens.
There have been a lot of rumors about him moving teams. There was a rumor that he was going to Astana. I think a couple of weeks ago, I told the listeners I'd heard a rumor that he was going somewhere or could possibly be going to a team which would represent a very, very surprising move indeed. Not a team known for success with sprinters or for having sprinters at all. Rob, I think at the time we were talking about Manchester United and you made some obtuse comment about football. Not Manchester United, but
their sister company.
That could be one of those scurrilous rumours. We'll see what happens with that, shall we? So we didn't fare too well. Our team, our broader family didn't fare too well when it came to predicting which sprinters were going to thrive in 2024. How about Frenchmen? We had one very bold prediction about how the French were going to do in 2024, how they were going to do in one race in particular. Surprisingly enough, that prediction came from a Frenchman. It was from François Tourmazeau. Let's hear that now, shall we?
So my prediction for 2024 in the great world of cycling is that a Frenchman is going to win the Tour de France. On what do I base my prediction? Well, it's very simple. As you know, the last time a Frenchman won the Tour de France was in 1985. And I covered my first Tour de France in 1986. And since then, no Frenchman won the Tour. So obviously the jinx was my fault. And since I've given up on covering the Tour, and I retired from the Tour last year, well, if there was really a jinx, and why not? There's every probability that a Frenchman is going to win the Tour.
Did a Frenchman win the Tour? Can anyone tell me?
No.
In a word, no.
No. We didn't really know who it could be at the time. We did have a chat. We talked about Romain Bardet maybe rolling back the years. François even mentioned it in his prediction as well that the Pinot Bardet generation, there would be maybe one last hurrah for them with Bardet.
Did get the first yellow jersey.
I mean, that was pretty impressive.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't a great tour for Salt Bay for David Gaudu, was it? But he redeemed himself somewhat at the Vuelta a España. But we did talk as well, chaps, about the possibility of a sort of a lucky break, a fuga bidone, as they say in Italy, winning the Tour de France and maybe a Frenchman doing it that way. That didn't happen. Didn't come close. So it didn't look at any point that there might be any danger of that. You could argue that the Vuelta a España, that nearly happened. I think that's probably a bit disrespectful to Ben O'Connor.
I wouldn't put that in the fuga bidone category.
No. But yeah, Larry, the French, there was a sort of season of light and shade for them, the French. I mean, your team obviously did really well, particularly in the first half of the year. Interesting sort of mixed noises coming out of French cycling at the moment. There was a big piece in L'Equipe today about the painting a pretty dim picture of amateur cycling in France and how a lot of clubs are closing, really struggling to get volunteers. There's been a lot of talk recently. It was Marc Madiot, wasn't it, in L'Equipe talking about how cycling's become such a bourgeois, a rich man's sport in France. And the grassroots are really dying in France. And then you hear other things like the TV audiences are pretty good, pretty buoyant. But one thing we can say pretty confidently is at the end of 2024, I don't think it feels as though France is much closer to having a Tour winner. Would you chaps agree?
Well, I don't know. What about this? It's a few years down the road.
Well, pressure, Paul. You're going there, right?
Exactly. What about this Paul Sexus kid? I mean, this kid was the greatest junior.
What have you heard, Larry? Come on, what have you heard? How good is this kid?
I mean, I don't know. I just heard what everyone else heard, you know, like that. I just read all this stuff on Twitter about these crazy numbers that he was doing, you know? So, I mean, this kid's doing insane numbers. And then I heard that essentially every single team was chasing after him, but that's obvious that that's the case. You know, he has a few-year deal with Decathlon. If he's also junior TT champ and then climbing like a monster, to me, that's obviously all signs point to, like, maybe really good future GC guy. But obviously, you know, the pros are totally different, so you never know. But I guess also just back to the, you know, whole thing with, like, yeah, the land amateur cycling in France and everything. You know, I do think I had this conversation the other day with someone. It's just the landscape of cycling is totally changing, you know, and the fact that everyone's going straight from juniors to the pros and then, you know, maybe doing 1 or 2 years under 23, you know, whereas like before there was like, you know, in France, there was like this huge amateur scene. And now all the good guys, instead of going to like an amateur team, they're going to a continental team. Especially in France, all these kids get paid if they go to a continental team, right?
So same in Italy, Larry. There's you probably know the name, you're probably familiar with the Zalf team.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sure. is a real institution in Italian cycling, been going 40 years, and they've just closed down this year.
Yeah,
for
someone
the same
tell
reason.
Me that. That's actually really sad. So yeah, I think, you know, the problem is, and you know, I even talked with some of the guys who had, you know, like at Worlds, I spoke with Axel Merckx a little bit, and, you know, like they're going to become a development team for Jayco. You know, so it's like even the teams that were really good and like continental teams, now they have to become development teams. Or sorry, like as in associated with a World Tour team. Otherwise, I mean, the team disappears. And so now it's like, I mean, you either need to be, if you're one of the best, you're in like a pro team structure if you're not already in the pro team coming out of the juniors. And I think that's totally killed the level and the support and everything in like the amateur, you know, in France, like the DN, like the Division One teams. Yeah, I guess they're just struggling because the landscape is changing. And I don't know, I guess they're going to have to evolve if they want to keep it going somehow, you know?
Again, I mentioned the people who point to, for example, very healthy buoyant TV figures. People also point to the fact that, I mean, BMX is doing pretty well. Mountain biking is doing pretty well. There is an argument that it's just a sort of changing of the landscape. Okay, people aren't joining, amateurs aren't joining clubs anymore, but they're sort of rallying around Strava groups. That's how they're getting their cycling. They're not, you know, they're maybe not racing, but they're doing Gran Fondos or Ciclo Sportives and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's quite difficult, really, to get a clear read on what's going on. Of course, we've got Lenny Martinez, who's proclaimed that he wants to win the Tour de France soon. That'll be an interesting project to observe from afar because, of course, Rod Ellingworth is going there to Bahrain victorious and he'll be sort of overseeing that effort. Talking about French men winning the Tour de France, just to getting into the spirit of things, I did give one prediction if there was going to be a French winner of the Tour de France, who was it going to be? I also predicted a few other ridiculous things. Let's hear them now, shall we?
Going back to our wondering about Frenchmen who could win the Tour de France and in the sort of unlikely fashion that we suggested, maybe Guillaume Martin will win the Tour de France, looking like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant. Have you seen Guillaume Martin recently? He's wonderfully hirsute.
I definitely saw Soto today. Yeah. And I was like, wow.
Looks magnificent.
I saw him in a suit. In a suit.
He's been in the woods for a while.
Into the wild with Guillaume Martin. Ineos to do much better than Manchester United. That's a hope more than a prediction. Not because I have any...
It's not too difficult, you know, at the minute either.
Personal bias towards Ineos. But yeah, obviously Dave Brailsford will be pulling the strings in both organisations to a certain extent. Jonathan Milan to win Milan-San Remo, proving that nominative determinism is a thing. Finally, the most frivolous and most silly of all, Patrick Lefebvre and Mikel Landa too will develop an unlikely friendship that culminates in them going on a boys' trip together to Venezuela next winter and doing a base jump together off Angel Falls.
So, chaps, no Revenant-style glorious victory for Guillaume Martin in the Tour de France. He didn't have the most successful year, Guillaume Martin. He really struggles to win races. Really good rider, but struggles to win races. Certainly didn't win the Tour. I thought that Ineos would do better than Manchester United. Rob,
You follow football.
Have they dragged United down, or is it the other way around?
I don't know. They were both equally woebegotten, weren't they, at times? Mm. Certainly yes. in the autumn. I thought Jonathan Milan would win Milan-San Remo. Now, I would suggest, I would claim on spurious, flimsy grounds, I got this right, because Jonathan Milan did win a Milan-San Remo kind of tribute stage of the Giro d'Italia. It was very similar. It was sort
except
of,
minus the Poggio and the Cipressa and the distance.
Milan-San Remo, writ small. I also predicted that a marvellous bromance would bloom between Patrick Lefebvre and Mikel Landa, and they would go base jumping in Venezuela together. I don't know if they have or they haven't. That the year is still, I think, 34 days left in this year, so that might still happen. Let's have a couple of others, shall we? Let's hear from Brian Nygaard, who, of course, accompanied me on the Giro d'Italia. What did Brian predict at the start of the year?
So my prediction for this season for 2024 is that we're going to hear a lot more about the One Cycling project, the sort of the Champions League idea that's been discussed and has been talked about, especially in the media, around cycling for quite a while.
Brian thought we would hear a lot about One Cycling. There was some recency bias in that, I think, wasn't there? Because that was a period, last winter was very eventful. All sorts was going on, wasn't it? Mergers, breakaway leagues, some big transfers that were maybe in the offing. And we sort of forgot about most of it, didn't we?
It all settled down once the racing started, didn't it, really? Mm. Because we'd heard all this. And, you know, and to be fair, there was quite a few logs being put on the fire. Plugger giving an interview left, right and centre, wasn't he? Saying, oh, no, we're going to hear a bit more about this. And there were other managers sort of grabbing a sack of firewood and throwing it on the fire as well. And then
Cliff Richard turned up and did his mistletoe wine dance. Larry's got no idea what that is. Go on.
No.
Go on. Go on.
And then you've just thrown me off there. So I know it's nearly Christmas, but well, there was no Saviour's Day at the end of that, Daniel. There's no Saviour's Day because it didn't yeah. continue the theme. Nothing happened, did it? Again, we just got on with the racing. And maybe because it was so eventful in terms of what was happening in terms of these, you know, performances. Remember, it started early with Pogacar attacking at Strade Bianche at 80-odd kilometres to go. Then we had the crashes. We had the will they, won't they make it to the Tour a couple of months. And then suddenly, after the Tour and transfer season, Olympic Games, the worlds were as they were. And maybe something's been talked about behind the scenes, but if it has, it's not really made any sort of news, has it?
Larry, anything on the grapevine? One cycling?
No, I mean, to be honest, when you mentioned that, I totally forgot about it. You know, like, that was the first time I heard about it in since probably the last time we talked about it on that podcast. I haven't heard literally anything, which is too bad because, I mean, if there's more investment in cycling, that's probably good for everyone. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There have been a few sort of high-powered, high-level meetings. One of them, that Congress, AIOCC Congress last few days. There was something else. I saw Richard Plugger photograph with David Lapartion.
Yeah, there was something in Nice. It was like a meeting of all
seminar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So who knows? In the next couple of weeks, there might be something more along those lines, I would suggest. I also predicted, actually, that it would be a tough year for David Lapartion, because I thought that a bit of noise was starting to build about all of the different sort of fingers he had in different pies, and people were starting to get a little bit cheesed off with it. And I thought that we might see, I don't want to say some sort of Lapartion scandal, but some teeth gnashing about him. We didn't really see too much, actually, in 2024. Again, as you said, Rob, the sort of racing dominated the narrative. Off the bike matters. We're not going to hear this, but we also had a prediction from a researcher in Lausanne, an anti-doping expert called Raphael Face, who talked about what things were going to look like on a doping front, anti-doping front, particularly with the Olympics approaching. Raphael sort of suggested that it would be going kind of back in time, certainly as far as some people were concerned, in that if there were going to be doping cases, we shouldn't be surprised if it was still sort of EPO that was being talked about, or EPO kind of analogs. Larry, we talked a bit about this in the episode, whether there was, you know, there was going to be some pre-Olympic debacle involving doping. Not much. Again, another quiet year on this front. There was obviously the tail end of the Superman Lopez scandal, which to a certain extent is still ongoing. That operation, Spanish police investigation, is still kind of ongoing. It hasn't been fully settled yet, but he's definitely out of the picture, Superman Lopez. No other high-profile positives. Larry, we did have this one story. We haven't spoken about this in the podcast, in any podcast to date. We did have this story from our friends at Escape Collective at the Tour de France about carbon monoxide and three teams experimenting with carbon monoxide as a, well, initially upon first reading of, well, just the headlines or the pull quotes, you might have assumed that this was purely for performance gains, performance enhancement, legal performance enhancement. As a point of order, just this week, in fact, I think yesterday at the World Tour Seminar in Nice, the UCI did called upon WADA to ban explicitly repeated CO, carbon monoxide, inhalation for performance enhancement. That was just yesterday. The teams themselves were sort of interrogated. It was UAE Emirates. It was Israel Premier Tech. And I'm pretty sure the third one, I'm just going to check this.
Visma.
It was. That they were using carbon monoxide to measure blood volume. And it was purely a testing protocol that they used, particularly after altitude camps, to see what kind of effect the altitude camps had had on their riders. What did you make of it all, Larry? And what did the riders generally in the peloton make of it? I'm sure you've discussed it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was actually... In general, I like Escape, you know, Escape Collective. I think they do a good job. But to be honest, for me, that was actually pretty shitty journalism. You know, like, that was just all for clicks. That was, you know, like, the way that they wrote the article. Yes, maybe there could be something there, but the way they wrote the article and the way they insinuated that these teams were, like, using this nefariously, to me, was just, it was bullshit, you know, like... That I thought was, it was not cool the way they wrote the article because
our ex friends at Escape Collective.
Yes, exactly. Sorry guys, but like, and I mean, I think they can agree with me that it wasn't really fair the way they wrote this article, you know, because they only presented at the end that actually this is the only way you can measure hemoglobin mass, and it's the gold standard, and it's the way that everyone does it if you do measure hemoglobin mass, which is probably the best practice that you can do if you go to altitude, right? Because the rest of us, we're just shooting in the dark, you know? I mean, we go to altitude, we hope we get a gain, but we don't really know, right? So the best practice would be to measure, to see if you do get a bump in hemoglobin mass from this altitude sojourn or whatever. And the only way to
French
do that...
Lovely bit of French there, Larry. That was free. Yeah.
Yeah. The only way to do that is... to use this carbon monoxide rebreathing method, you know, which is like they breathe in carbon monoxide for, I don't know, something like 8 minutes or something. And then they do it like after a certain amount of time, you know, like they expire. I don't exactly know how it is, but anyway, whatever it is, it's the only way to measure this. And yes, maybe having carbon monoxide at your disposal could open up other potential uses. And maybe some people are doing it. But saying that because these teams measure the hemoglobin mass and they're the only three teams that are professional enough to actually go about doing this in the right way, like, are all of a sudden doing something wrong, to me, that was just messed up, you know? Like, and that is, like, this is what perpetuates, you know, like, insinuations and rumors about doping when, like, there's that, you know, just because they have this thing doesn't mean they're abusing it, right? And to me, that was really stupid. So anyway,
yeah, I've read some coverage of it that I haven't particularly liked, and not specifically the original piece, but there was a big piece in a German magazine called Tour magazine a few weeks ago about precisely this, and there were some interesting things in it, like for example the fact that the manufacturer of the machine being used, or the machine being used by Israel and Visma. The manufacturer is always aware when it's being used because it's somehow connected up. So they can effectively, the manufacturer can monitor the use of it and and report back on whether, you know, they think it's been used for nefarious reasons. But the same article made an association between a gentleman called Andrea Agostini, who is the business manager at UAE Emirates, but he's also was a childhood friend of Marco Pantani, and Tadej Pogacar possibly using this for performance enhancement. And when you read something like that, you know, I know Andrea Agostini, but more to the point, I know what Andrea Agostini does in that organization, more or less. And to suggest that he could in any way be vaguely connected to some top secret high tech doping method, and that was why Pogacar was winning all of these races, I just thought undermined the whole article. There was also something in the Swiss press, Le Temps, the newspaper, which said that carbon monoxide is a huge topic of conversation between the French riders, and they're all very alarmed about it. And then in the next breath, it said another huge topic of conversation, and that is ketones, and they're all really worried about ketones. Well, we had this conversation a few weeks ago that, you know, ketones is a widely commercially available product now, and, you know, so much so that, you know, we see riders sort of swigging bottles of it at the end of stages. Okay, it's, you know, it's known about by the federation's governing bodies. There is still testing going on into whether, you know, it might one day be construed as doping, but to just this kind of nudge, wink, innuendo laden form of journalism, I think it does us all a disservice as journalists. I don't like it, really.
No, I mean, I agree, and without a doubt, yeah, it could be being abused, you know, like I don't discount that. There's definitely the possibility, and you know, there were these studies that showed that, yeah, you could, like, you know, there were performance enhancing, like, benefits to using this, but like as in a certain way, but not in the way that when you just measure your hemoglobin, right? So I just didn't like the way that, like, just because these teams are measuring their hemoglobin mass, they must be using it nefariously as well, right? So to me, that was just not cool. And yes, obviously it's possible, but yeah, I just didn't like the way that they made that connection.
Larry, let's finish, shall we, by giving you some flowers. Let's hear a Larry Warbass prediction from January. Let's see how accurate they were.
I think Matteo Jorgensen's going to win a classic. I know he's doing the classics, and I think he'll be able to, you know, profit off of their collective strength and, you know, do like a Christophe Laporte kind of thing and win a classic. And then I think Remco will win the Olympic road race.
Wow, Larry, a couple of belting predictions there. Matteo, are we going to call, it was Dwarsdorf of London, are we going to call that classic?
We'll call it a classic.
It's a semi-classic. Yeah. And the first ever American winner of that race as well, Matteo was.
Yeah, Larry is going to need all the friends he can get after that outburst. Especially directed at an American website.
It's a good website. I mean, I literally was reading an article there this morning, but yeah.
Yes, Larry, we're going to, for the purposes of this podcast, Dwarsdorf London is a classic. And Remco Evenepoel winning the Olympic road race. What an ingenious bit of prognosticating that was, Larry. Just take us through. How did you read that one in the tea leaves?
I'll be honest, I forgot that I made both of these predictions. So I thought one of my predictions was going to be that Cav won a 35th stage. But I guess the thing is that I thought about Remco is, like, he's so good at, like, getting away. And once he's away, he's incatchable. You know, like, people can't catch him, right? Like, so I guess that was kind of the way I saw it. You know, he's, yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about aero. He's super aero. And yeah, he's pretty good at, like, one day races. So I guess that's, yeah, I just thought, like, yeah, it was going to be a possibility. And then, yeah, I knew Matteo was, like, going in a really good direction. And I knew that, you know, going to Visma would be a really big step up for him. And I thought he'd have, yeah, sort of like the best preparation going into the classics. And yeah, he's a really good rider. And yeah, I thought that he was going to have a really good year. I probably didn't foresee him having even as good of a year as he did, like winning Paris-Nice, second in the Dauphiné. But Yeah, that's pretty cool to see.
Eagerly anticipate your predictions in the 2025 speculation episode, Larry.
Just let me know before that I can get a bet on, yeah?
Yeah, Larry's not allowed. Larry's not allowed, of course. Well, on that sunny note, on that triumphant note, self-congratulatory note, I think we should conclude there. Larry, what are you coming up in the next week or so? You got, when's your expensive timepiece distribution get together?
I don't know, but the training camp starts the 9th of December, so heading back to Calpe area for that.
Wow, like everyone else, except Red Bull. They still plant their big German flag in the island that Rob calls home, Mallorca. And we'll be there, Rob.
We will be. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Well, chaps, thank you very much. That was very enjoyable to make fun of ourselves and our friends. Make a few enemies. Alienate a few people. Always
sorry,
the best
sorry, guys.
Happy Christmas, everyone, by the way.
Happy Christmas.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's Low Odor Spray Paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum Spray Paints now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.